Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the April call. If you're new to the call, and there's a lot of new chapters, welcome, and we'll try and get all of you mentioned by name a little bit later in the call. My name is Mark Reynolds. I'm one of the people who get the privilege of hosting this call sometimes. What's going to be happening is in a couple of minutes, I'm going to be introducing our guest speaker. We're going to go over some of the things that happened since last month's call. I also want to talk a little bit about, you know, it was interesting that the White House floated a trial balloon of a carbon tax earlier this week. I want to say something about that and what it says about our work, which I think it does nothing but help us. And then we'll go over what we're going to be doing this month. So basic format, get educated, get into action, practice speaking, make something big happen every month. I thought one of the ways it would be nice to tell our speaker a little bit about our who she's speaking with today is to share the values that we posted on our website this week. So this week we shared a list of values that CCL has identified as our core six values, which are focus, optimism, relationships, integrity, personal power, and being nonpartisan. So the first one, focus. We're focused on what we see as the single most impactful solution to climate change, a national carbon fee. We know it will not solve the problem entirely and appreciate the work that our friends and other groups are doing. So that we can be effective, we do not let ourselves get distracted by work that does not support our core purpose. After we accomplish our goal, we will tackle the next most impactful solution. Optimism. We believe that people are good and that democracy works. We are confident that our approach will work because we see progress. We stand for a solution, not in protest of other solutions. We don't expect perfection from ourselves or others. This is a process, and we know that people can improve. Together, we are a community that offers one another comfort, support, and fun as we work. Relationships. We take the most generous approach to other people as possible. Appreciation, gratitude, and respect. We listen. We work to find common values, and we endeavor to understand our own biases. We're honest and firm. We know that there's a place for protest, but our approach is to build consensus. That's what will bring enduring change. That's why elected officials and their staff, no matter what their politics, say they are happy to see us and they mean it. Integrity. We're prepared and do our research. We're always on time for meetings. Our approach is thoughtful and thorough. We consult experts and use data. We are open to new information. In fact, we solicit opposing opinions. We refine our solutions to make them better. We follow up when we're asked. We keep on. Personal power. We use our voices to be heard. This simple act transforms us from spectators to engaged citizens, and it reveals the true nature of democracy to us. We are volunteer-driven, trusting volunteers to make important decisions and to create and develop things that will be valued by Citizens Climate Lobby. And then last, nonpartisan. Our group is open to all who are serious about solving climate change. You're welcome, no matter where you live, what you wear, what you do for a living, or who you voted for in the last election. We work with elected officials and community leaders from across the political spectrum because we believe that everyone is a potential ally. So, Captain, I thought that that would just give you a little bit of background of the kind of people that you're talking to. And just so everybody on the call knows, we're very excited that Catherine Hammack, who is a former Assistant Secretary of the Army, who is also an experienced leader in the energy and environmental field, she was appointed by President Obama and confirmed by the Senate to be the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Installations, Energy, and Environment. She worked with the Obama administration focusing on net zero, and net zero includes energy, water, and waste. Resiliency and sustainability for all of the Army's installations worldwide. So she has a lot more additional background and lead and obviously credentials that brought her to that position. But given we wanted to focus on her work with the Pentagon, we thought we would leave it there. So Catherine, so great to have you. Thank you so much for being available on a Saturday.
Great. Well, thank you very much, Mark, and I'm delighted to join you. I can't see the slides, but let's go to the first slide, which talks about the link between climate change and national security. So many ask, why is the military interested in climate change? And the basic reason has to do with national security, which is the military's or the Army's mission. There are passageways opening up in the Arctic, mass migrations due to water scarcity, increasing defense support to civil authorities, and humanitarian crises from natural disasters. We know that when there are water shortages, that can lead to food shortages. When there are food shortages, that can lead to civil unrest. And civil unrest undermines weak governments and can lead to military conflicts. Climate change is a threat multiplier and a destabilizing force. It is a threat to the security of the United States and indeed to security and stability of countries everywhere. There's a quote from a military advisory board which stated, "Time and tide wait for no one." I heard Secretary John Kerry talk about Nigeria. Climate change did not lead to the rise of the terrorist group Boko Haram, but severe drought and the government's inability to cope with it helped create the political and economic volatility that militants exploited. Next slide. And I'm sure many of you have found that the words climate change can be a signal to stop the conversation. The person you're talking to, their mind is made up. It's a hoax. And so it's hard to start a conversation when logic is given a deaf ear. Many members of Congress want to stop the military from spending any money on climate change, viewing any expenditures as unnecessary to the military mission. So what we have done is worked to change the narrative. Next slide. Much of the narrative around climate change has been about what we must do to adapt or to mitigate climate change. Clean energy, sustainability, reducing greenhouse gas levels, protecting the environment, social equity. When you change the narrative and focus on resiliency as the why, we find there are few objections. We must build resilience on our military bases. We must increase mission effectiveness through resiliency. If our military vehicles can't move because all the roads leading into or out of the base are flooded, we're not very mission effective. If drought and the risk of wildfires prevent our troops from training, they will not be as mission effective. If the permafrost under our buildings and bases in Alaska thaws, it affects our readiness. So it's hard to say no to increasing resiliency. Next slide. So I really think of resiliency as the top of a four-legged stool. Energy, economics, climate change mitigation, political stability are like the four legs of the stool. Each of these interrelated factors must be adequate to support a stable and growing country. Possessing energy resources sufficient to meet its needs is a great political asset for a nation. To not have sufficient energy resources is a political weakness that makes nations vulnerable domestically and internationally. Climate change is a global challenge with effects that transcend national borders and can affect political stability. So the stool is going to topple over if you are weak in any of these areas. Next slide. I found this graph fascinating. It's about California, and shout out to all those groups in California who are joining, because it really disputes the perception that climate change mitigation has adverse impacts on economics. California has achieved significant reductions in its greenhouse gas emissions and acquired significant additions of renewable energy while still achieving economic and population growth. This shows that economic growth is not inconsistent with greenhouse gas reductions and that renewable energy can be an economic stimulation. I read that Governor Brown has recently established state goals to reduce short-lived climate pollutants, focused on four primary aspects. First, reducing emissions of greenhouse gas from natural and working lands in the state. Secondarily, doubling the state's mandated energy efficiency reductions from existing buildings. Then thirdly, reducing petroleum usage in vehicles by 50%. And lastly, increasing the production of renewable electricity to 50%. So if you look at California, California is a significant economic block and population center in the United States. Therefore, it's also a significant user of energy. In 2016, the economic output in California surpassed France to make California the sixth largest economy in the world. Now, obviously, it's a dominant percentage of the U.S. GDP. So what California accomplishes in the way of greenhouse gas reduction makes a significant contribution to the United States and to global efforts to abate climate change. I also saw that California has announced that if the present administration in Washington ignores or renounces the science of climate change, California is going to continue its own greenhouse gas reduction efforts. Next slide. I'm talking about resiliency here, and there's increasing attention worldwide on resiliency. If you take a look back, the Global Reporting Initiative focused on defining sustainability for corporations to report to their shareholders. And studies have shown that sustainably managed corporations have higher returns on investment. They are more profitable, sort of like the California model. Well, we are the shareholders in the cities in which we live around the world. The Rockefeller Foundation is working to define resiliency in a global or citywide context. They have defined resiliency as the capacity of individuals and communities, institutions, businesses, and systems within a city to survive, adapt, and grow, no matter what kinds of chronic stresses and acute shocks they experience. Now, notice that the words climate change are not in this narrative. The Rockefeller Foundation has identified and funded 100 resilient cities, and there are 23 cities in the U.S. that were selected to receive funding for chief resiliency officers. Now, this is a fairly new initiative, but it has the promise to accelerate urban resilience and adaptation. This is a different way to talk about climate change adaptation or mitigation. They are working to change the narrative. Next slide. Now, in the Army, to better communicate resiliency or climate change adaptation, we created the Net Zero Initiative. Now, this is an inverted pyramid because most of the effort is and should be on reduction, the largest part of the pyramid. And that is the first step in a net zero journey for energy, water, and waste. Next slide. Now, we expanded the definitions to provide more clarity. And these are simple visual roadmaps. You start at the top and you work your way down. Net zero energy starts with reducing the unnecessary use of energy, followed by the implementation of energy efficiency strategies. You then proceed with energy recovery and cogeneration, with renewable energy being the last strategy implemented. The Army now has two net zero energy installations, one in Kentucky and one in New York, with a couple others soon to come online. They produce as much energy as they consume from clean energy resources. Now, the net zero water strategy is to ensure that you do not deplete your local watershed, but utilize water in proportion to the recharge rate so as not to deplete the quantity and quality of the ground and surface water resources of that region. That strategy strives to balance water availability and use to ensure a sustainable water supply for years to come. Now, the net zero waste strategy is to eliminate waste going to landfills. Now, I think of landfills as future archaeological sites. What are future generations going to think about the resources that we have buried? I've read that there are now companies that have started to mine landfills to recover some of those resources. In the Army, we want to use the lands that we have for training, not landfills. So our net zero waste strategy is heavily focused on reusing the resources that we have. Now, it is a requirement for all Army bases to view their investments from a net zero lens. And in doing so, we have seen significant reductions in energy consumption, water use, and waste to landfill. We have also seen reductions in greenhouse gas emissions and increased resiliency. One of the things that we announced late in 2016 was over the last 2 years, the Army has invested over $1 billion in renewable or in energy savings performance contracts. Now, with budgets going down, the Army has had less money to spend. And so you'd think it would be difficult for us to implement net zero. Yet by leveraging the capabilities of the private sector and their funding, we are able to implement strategies and then pay back out of the energy savings or water savings that we achieve. So one of the things we have found is that resiliency doesn't necessarily have a cost associated with it. In fact, quite often it has a savings. Next slide. Now, the net zero approach has been expanded to our contingency bases. This increases their mission effectiveness and decreases the logistics challenges in transporting fuel and water. In Iraq in 2007, one in 24 convoys suffered casualties, with 70 to 80% of convoy weight being fuel and water. This made net zero a priority. In Afghanistan in 2014, the number was reduced to one in 46 convoys suffering casualties. But this is not good enough. We want all fuel to go to mobility, not generating electricity. And when we did a study right now, 40% of the fuel delivered goes to generators that make electricity. So we've worked hard to develop a net zero base camp that makes water from air and uses solar for all base power. With batteries to store energy, soldiers then have the power that they need to operate their equipment, and the fuel can go to mobility. We have found that when we communicate Army strategies in terms of resiliency and cost savings, we do not have objections to our initiative. Renewable energy is produced at or lower than grid cost, generating resiliency and cost savings. Net zero strategies reduce operating costs and increase resiliency to environmental impacts. And so, the Army's strategy on climate change has been to change the narrative so that we can continue with the efforts that we are doing without objections from Congress or others. But remember, above all, the Army works for you. Brave men and women, your brothers and sisters, mothers and fathers, volunteer to take the fight against terrorism out of our backyards to the backyards of those who threaten our security. We have asked much of them, and I ask you to thank them, welcome them home, and help them find jobs when they leave the service. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Great. Catherine, thank you so much. Unfortunately, the slides didn't proceed as well, but what you were saying was crystal clear and communicated very clearly. And I think that it's fascinating that, you know, when you saw a potential roadblock, just a shift in narrative to resiliency being the focus of your work, that allowed you to continue to progress when climate change was a potential obstacle. So one thing that we spend a lot of time on is meetings with Republicans and Democrats. Is there anything you see different in approaching either of those kinds of offices and how you would present the kind of information you were just talking about?
Well, first of all, as you mentioned early in your opening, you need to have done some research and sort of understand where that person is coming from. When you focus on resiliency, you focus on what the impacts have been, and many cities around the United States have seen impacts from natural disasters or impacts from climate change, whether they be drought or flood. And that there's a cost to that. So when you focus on resiliency, you're looking at mitigating the cost to ensure that your society, their constituents, can continue in operation. So I think if you phrase things from a resiliency standpoint, it's hard for members of Congress to not listen to that, whether they are Republican or Democrat. The issues on how you increase resiliency are many and varied, and that is what you are doing. But the why is resiliency. And I think if you continue to communicate that, or even start the conversation with that and keep refocusing it to make it personal to the members. One thing I have found every time I'm on the Hill is every member does speak up for their community. And I know my team periodically would say, well, they seem to be very geocentric. They're focused just on what's going on in their community with their constituents and not on the global world that in the Army we had to take a look at. And I found that to be okay. They are voted, they are elected, they are hired by you, and they do listen. And they do pay attention. And when you communicate what's important to you, that resiliency is important to you because you want the fundamental characteristics of your business and your families to be able to continue, it'll be hard for them to not listen.
Yeah, so let's talk about the local districts for just a minute. For instance, I live in San Diego. There's a lot of military bases here. And one of the things that we like to do is to, you know, shed light on successes in the district when we speak with members from both sides of the aisle. Is there a way for us to track how different bases and operations are doing towards net zero so that we could bring that up in the meetings with congressional offices?
I know that the Army bases quite often issue press releases on their progress. And certainly we have publications that have identified the progress that they have made and the importance of it. So I think that that is something that you can find online or you can find on the internet, the progress they are making. But I would not hesitate to meet with the Department of Public Works at the base to let them know what your mission is and ask how you can communicate the successes that they have had.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea. Well, thank you so much for making yourself available today. Thank you for all your important work that you have done and that you will do. And we're just really grateful that you could be on the call today, Catherine. Thank you so much.
Thank you. And I've certainly enjoyed the conversation.
Great. And you're welcome to stay on. We have about 10 more minutes of business or 15 minutes of information to conduct. And you're certainly welcome to stay on with us if you like. And but you know, thank you for providing the part we asked you to do. Great. Okay, so the next thing I want to do is I think that many people in the organization have noticed that we had an initiative to fund the part of the organization that we typically do not. You know, most of our fundraising is for citizens climate education, but we wanted to beef up our DC staff. And so there was an effort to raise money for our C4 organization, Citizens Climate Lobby, as contrasted with Citizens Climate Education. And Lene Pentengill, could you join us for just a minute to tell us how that has gone so far?
Sure. Mark, this was one of the most aggressive fundraising campaigns we've ever held, bordering on the slightly delusional, if truth be told. We set a goal of raising $17,000 a month in new donations to Citizens Climate Lobby so that we could hire those two congressional staffers in D.C. And we knew these positions were going to greatly amplify our volunteer voices and actions in D.C. And this was a crucial step to take to hopefully get legislation passed this year. So at the time we started the campaign on March 1st, we had only $14,000 a month in monthly donations to Citizens Climate Education, which is CCL's sister nonprofit that's tax deductible. CCL is not tax deductible, making it more challenging to raise money for this side. But this is what we needed to do, and so that's where we set our sights. And lo and behold, we did it. we had over 400 people make donations and raise more than $18,000 a month for CCL. We had a lot of members recruiting others to donate. We had some big lifts with some really sizable donations, and it all came together. So we're not wasting any time here. I know we're actually interviewing right now for these positions, and we'll soon be able to tell you who we hire. So thank you everyone who made this happen. You have completely blown me away yet again. What are you going to do next? I can't wait to see.
All right, great. And one of those people could start as soon as this week, everybody. So for everybody who financially contributed to that, for everybody who just cheered everybody on, thank you. We really thought it was a pretty wild target, but it happened. And so we're all pretty excited about that. I don't know if you noticed in the chat as people we were starting the call, but David, our regional coordinator from Africa, was on the call. And in Africa, and actually Algiers, North Africa, our first North African group is starting in Algiers today. So David, to you and everybody and all the work you're doing over there, congratulations. I also just want to mention, we've had a lot of chapters come on in the last couple of months, including some really big numbers. You know, Chico had 100 people, Reading had 65 people. But just so you all know, just in the last couple of months, Norfolk, Virginia, Red Hook, New York, Birmingham, Alabama, Oaxaca, New Jersey, Morristown, New Jersey, Sonora, California, Chillicothe, Ohio, Overland, Ohio, Venice, Florida, Hayward, Wisconsin, Lexington, Michigan, Blacksburg, Virginia, Tacoma, Washington, Las Vegas, Nevada, Sitka, Alaska, ooh, another rough one to pronounce, Tuggeranong, Australia, Australia, whew, Little Rock, Arkansas, St. George, Utah, Naperville, Illinois, Naples, Florida, Fort Myers, Florida, Pocatello, Idaho, Milpitas, California, Brooklyn, New York, Matanuska Valley, Alaska, Auburn, California, Baltimore, Maryland, Huntsville, Texas, Round Rock, Texas, and Muncie, Indiana. So I'm sorry, I'm sure there's ones I missed, but it's just so great to have so many new chapters, and welcome, and great to have you all aboard. So since the beginning of this year for everybody, we've had 210 meetings with congressional offices. That's with a lot of the spring lobby drive not reporting yet. So already 210 meetings with congressional offices, 849 letters to the editor, 139 op-eds. In 2016, 624 CCLers made 1,158 presentations. Our goal for 2017 is 2,000. So please make sure you're out there making those presentations, talking to people, giving the talks, et cetera. Okay, so last year for the international conference, we figured out how to get 800 people into lobby meetings. People can come after that, but we figured out how to get 800 people. We reconfigured that this year, and we figured out how we can get 950 people into lobby meetings in DC in June. As of yesterday, there were 792 people registered in the conference already. That's with a couple of months to go. So if you're planning on coming and you want a lobby schedule, or you know people are planning on coming and they want a lobby schedule, please let them know it's a good idea to register now. Make sure they register ahead of time. You can still come to the conference. You don't have to lobby, but I think it just adds an element that's really important and that we want to make sure that everybody who wants the lobby gets a chance to do so. Okay, so also, really interesting. So the White House sends out a trial balloon, saying they're interested in having a carbon tax be part of tax reform. Now, they, you know, pulled it back pretty quickly, but it was very interesting seeing that coming from the White House. Now, we've never been interested in a carbon tax as part of tax reform. We're for carbon dividends. We have a very specific plan. We know it's the most effective plan. We know it's what will get the most support from the public. But two things that are really interesting. For a long time, the only people who really understood or said anything about carbon taxes were academics, economists, and policy wonks. The fact that the White House is floating this tells us that you and I have made that a legitimate concept out in the atmosphere of politics. So your relentless work, the constant letters, the op-eds, the meetings with congressional office has changed the dynamic that's out there so that it's something that has legitimacy in the political landscape. It also, with the White House floating it, it should make it a lot easier for Republicans to introduce carbon pricing bills. So that was a big development. It may not have lasted long in the news cycle, but it was a big development of showing the really remarkable progress that you are making. Okay, a couple more things. One, in Canada, we're gonna focus on letters to the editor this month. April is always, for both US and Canada, around the world it really should be, our biggest opportunity for publication because of Earth Day. The papers are looking for stuff. And then also in Canada, we are going to focus on getting sign-on to the Tech and Business CCL Canada open letter. In the US, we've sent out a media packet to pitch to your newspapers. And we're hoping that everybody's already sent that to your paper. Remember, if for some reason your newspaper turns you down, offer them an op-ed as an alternative. Usually April is the month that we get the most op-eds that we've ever had every year. We're also asking you to write your House Republicans and ask them to co-sponsor the Republican climate resolution and ask Democrats to support revenue neutral carbon fees. And then there's a great exercise for practicing communicating in the action sheet. Please make sure you always practice. You know, it's the only thing that allows us to make our skills better. One of the things that people always observed about Michael Jordan, who is arguably the best basketball player that ever lived, whether you're from Chicago or not, most people agree on that, is that he was always the first person in the gym and the last person out of the gym. So yes, he looks like this man with just, you know, incredible God-given talents, but he was the first person in and the last person out. At our second conference, we had quite a few people from Canada, but for 95% of the people in meetings, it was the first time they'd ever been in a meeting with a congressional office. Cheryl McNamara was there from Toronto, and she said she got in her first lobby meeting, and everybody panicked, and everybody froze. And she's sitting there going, and I'm the one from Canada. So she starts rattling off talking points, and she says she has this thought to herself, oh, well, yeah, they're right. Laser talks work. So we do want you to make sure that you take time to practice the exercises. You know, the only way we can figure out what actually works and what we're communicating is to say it out loud and actually hear it. Okay, then here's the last thing for today. So, you know, the people getting endorsements have been doing remarkable work. And, you know, this month includes three municipalities. It's always important leaders, businesses, you know, all kinds of people making endorsements of our work. This one came in this week, and you'll see why it got my attention. Here's what this gentleman says. He says, so in the name of the Ogala tribe and the Lakota Nation, the very least I can do is fully endorse the immediate creation of carbon fee and dividend, urging the U.S. Congress to act, and by do so, helping raise awareness at a world level of the fact that preserving life comes at a cost to all of us. He wrote this letter to the people of the United States, the people of the Lakota Nations, the majority leader of the Congress, the President of the United States, the Chief Justice, and to every citizen of the world, and signed it Mel Lone Hill, Chief of the Ogala Sioux Tribe. So, you know, I think this is a guy that we're not going to let down. All right, everybody, thank you so much for all your great work. We'll talk to you next month. Have a great month. Go make some big things happen, everybody. Thank you.